If your seas wash only inaccessible rocks, let the people be barbarous and eat fish. They will live more quietly, perhaps better, and most certainly more happily. In short, besides those maxims which are common to all, every people has its own particular circumstances which demand a legislation peculiar to itself. It was thus that the Hebrews formerly, and the Arabs more recently, had religion for their principal object. That of the Athenians was literature, that of Carthage and Tyre, commerce, of Rhodes, naval affairs, of Sparta, war, and of Rome, virtue. The author of the Spirit of Laws has shown the art by which the legislator should frame his institutions towards each of these objects. But if the legislator, mistaking his object, should take up a principle different from that which arises from the nature of things, if one should tend to slavery and the other to liberty, if one to wealth and the other to population, one to peace and the other to conquests, the laws will insensibly become enfeebled, the Constitution will be impaired, and the state will be subject to incessant agitations until it is destroyed or becomes changed, and invincible nature regains her empire. But if nature is sufficiently invincible to regain its empire, why does not Rousseau admit that it had no need of the legislator to gain its empire from the beginning? Why does he not allow that by obeying their own impulse, men would of themselves apply agriculture to a fertile district and commerce to extensive and commodious coast without the interference of a Lycurgus, a Solon, or a Rousseau, who would undertake it at the risk of deceiving themselves? Be that as it may, we see with what a terrible responsibility Rousseau invests inventors, institutors, conductors, and manipulators of societies. He is, therefore, very exacting with regard to them. He who dares to undertake the institutions of a people ought to feel that he can, as it were, transform every individual who is by himself a perfect and solitary whole, receiving his life and being from a larger whole of which he forms a part. He must feel that he can change the constitution of man to fortify it and substitute a social and moral existence for the physical and independent one that we have all received from nature. In a word, he must deprive man of his own powers to give him others that are foreign to him. Poor human nature! What would become of its dignity if it were entrusted to the disciples of Rousseau? Renal. The climate, that is, the air and the soil, is the first element for the legislator. His resources prescribe to him his duties. First, he must consult his local position. A population dwelling upon maritime shores must have laws fitted for navigation. If the colony is located in an inland region, a legislator must provide for the nature of the soil and for its degree of fertility. It is more especially in the distribution of property that the wisdom of legislation will appear. As a general rule, and in every country, when a new colony is founded, land should be given to each man sufficient for the support of his family. In an uncultivated island, which you are colonizing with children, it will only be needful to let the germs of truth expand in the developments of reason. But when you establish old people in a new country, the skill consists in only allowing it those injurious opinions and customs which it is impossible to cure and correct. If you wish to prevent them from being perpetuated, you will act upon the rising generation by a general and public education of the children. A prince or legislator ought never to found a colony without previously sending wise men there to instruct the youth. In a new colony, every facility is open to the precautions of the legislator who desires to purify the tone and the manners of the people. If he has genius and virtue, the lands and the men there are at his disposal, will inspire his soul with a plan of society that a writer can only vaguely trace, and in a way that would be